Rádióegyetem. Teller Ede előadása a Berzsenyi Dániel Tanárképző Főiskolán. A felvétel 1991. november 5-én készült. Az előadás angol nyelvű.
Very much of what I have learned of physics, I have learned of this book. And also about other things I learned something from him, including the definition of an expert, that is a person who, through his own painful experience, has found out about all the mistakes that one can commit in a very narrow field. I should introduce myself as not an expert in superconductivity. I am at the very beginning of becoming an expert, because I find that I am making more and more mistakes. Some of these I would like to share with you. What I will say will not be only superconductivity, but it is, as you all know, a very remarkable phenomenon. And as you also know, not unconnected with what you are discussing here. In particular, I have to tell you about the new phenomenon of high temperature superconductivity. I claim that it has a number of common features. Few free electrons obeying the exclusion principle, but I would not say that they are in a Fermi sea. I will say, because there are few of them, that they are in a Fermi puddle. Furthermore, this Fermi puddle occurs in an ionic crystal. We may just as well start from the example of the first discovery, the lanthanum copper oxide, La2CuO4, which is an insulator and not superconductive. When you substitute a few strontiums for the lanthanums, then it begins to get superconductive when you have substituted a few percent. When you have substituted 7.5% of the lanthanums by strontium, then you get the maximum transition temperature at 40 degrees. What is going on? I will concentrate on this lanthanum compound, and then it will be quickly possible to generalize. And I will stay for a few minutes on safe grounds and tell you what people really agree on, or almost agree on. The compound contains a perovskite layer, CuO2. I would like to draw it to you. Perhaps it will take too much time. And it will come out all right. And between each two copper atoms in the middle, there is an oxygen. The circles are oxygens. Tell me, is this more or less visible to the audience? The property of these lattices is that many atoms and ions are out of place. Not that way, but in some way. Now, this perovskite lattice is present in almost all the high-temperature superconductors. In the lanthanum compound, there is one layer of such a perovskite lattice, and above and below, there are two layers of lanthanum monoxide lattices in such a way that oxygens are above and below the copper. But the lanthanums don't lie above each other. So, perovskite, lanthanum oxide, perovskite. This is a purely ionic lattice, lanthanum 3 plus, copper 2 plus, oxygen 2 minus, insulator, nothing funny about it, except that it's anti-ferromagnetic, about which we might have to talk later for a moment. The interesting thing happens when you begin to substitute barium or strontium for lanthanum. That extracts electrons from the perovskite lattice instead of some electrons. There appear holes. These whole conductivity makes out of the perovskite plane a electric conductor, a metal-like thing, but not quite. I will point out the differences. And that has then the property that at a relatively high temperature, it becomes superconducting. I need not tell you about the electron configuration of everything. I have to tell you about the electron configuration of the copper. The copper lacks two electrons. It lacks the outer S electron, and it lacks one D electron. So that the copper altogether has 9 D electrons. The question is, what is this electron configuration? I might tell you now, by the way, that the last 2 D electrons are coupled with oxygen P electrons, making bonding and anti-bonding relations, that the bonding states, which are mostly on the oxygen, are occupied, that the anti-bonding states that are mostly on the copper are the anti-bonding states, that is where there is no occupation yet, and we are talking about these anti-bonding states in which the ninth D electron of the copper participates. And that ninth electron is fully occupied. Half the anti-bonding states are occupied. Half of them are empty. And I don't want to explain to you why. It's not too difficult. It arranges itself so that on alternate coupers, these anti-bonding ninth electrons have spins up and down, pretty firmly bound there, and that is what makes it anti-ferromagnetic and an insulator. Now I want to describe to you all these things from a different point of view. I told these things only to make a connection with the usual description, and they are, I believe, correct statements. The essential points come now. The last D electron that could hold really two electrons, the ninth and tenth, we spin up and spin down, is half filled. I will draw now, and that now begins to be essential, and I must admit, not at all certain. I am now telling you a little bit of what my imagination is, although a few people share it, including, I know, the last of the BCS, Schaefer, is thinking along similar lines, I was told. This perovskite plane with its nine electrons, out of which electrons are extracted by another layer, is the common property of all these new discoveries, the 1-2-3 compound, the barium compound, the thallium compounds, all behave this way. They all have their maximum transition temperature when approximately 15% of the ninth electron are missing. But I will now show you what happens when none of them is missing. I draw the Brillouin zone. Do I have more places to write on? This is the Brillouin zone. The corners are, the two dimensions are, the quasi-momenta called kx and k minus a, kx and ky, and they vary in the corners between minus pi and pi. So, for instance, this corner may be minus pi, no. I don't know how to go. This corner may be minus pi for kx and ky. And they are quantities standing for the momentum. The center of the Brillouin zone has no momentum. Half the Brillouin zone is filled, If all of it would be filled, I would have 10 electrons. Only 9 are there. And in order to fill half of it, I show you the inner quadrangle which is filled. Here. Inside this quadrangle, all states occupied, outside, all of them empty. A good approximation. The energy should change continuously along this boundary, and this should be, this square should be the Fermi surface. But it isn't. The thing is not a conductor, it is an insulator. Why? Two electrons don't like to be on the same kappa. The electrons are in an inner orbit on the kappa, and that means if there are two of them on the same kappa, they repel each other quite strongly. You have a high potential that should be avoided if possible. And it can be avoided by a trick which I want to put before you. I'm talking about wave functions, e to the ikx times x plus iky times y, plane waves in these two dimensions. I'm only talking two dimensions. And that holds for all these newfangled superconductors. Now, instead of this exponential function, which I write as psi of k, I write a new psi function, k plus pi. And this is shorthand for something or other. By k plus pi, I mean that I have increased kx by pi, and I also have increased k by pi. And that gives the wave function a property that on neighboring sites, k and k plus pi will have opposite signs, because they will differ by a factor, e to the i pi, which is minus, all right, which is minus 1. And now, I am going to take two new wave functions out of these, which are simply psi plus k plus or minus psi plus k plus pi, all right? And because of the properties that I have discussed a moment ago, you will easily figure out that if I have used the plus sign, the wave function will be present on every second kappa and absent on all the rest. And if I use the minus sign, then precisely those places will be occupied which have been empty previously. To be explicit, I have one wave function which will be here but not here, and here but not here. Also, when it was here, then it is not here, but it is here, it is there on the diagonals. So I have two sublattices, and I now occupy the one sublattice, we spin up, the other sublattice we spin down, and now I'm in clover. Now things fine. Because electrons with the same spin cannot be on the same kappa because of the antisymmetry, and electrons with different spin cannot be on the same kappa because I have engineered it that way. Now this would be fine, except for the misfortune that psi k and psi k plus pi have different energies. On the diagram here, I can show you where these wave functions lie. If I have psi of k here, if I have psi of k here, then psi of k plus pi will be here. If the one is inside the quadrangle, the other one will be outside the quadrangle. And this one, the one will be lower than the other. So I have mixed together two wave functions of different energy and that they don't like. Except if I am just on this assumed Fermi surface, which is filled in the simple lanthanum compound, all right? Then psi k and psi k plus pi, which would lie, for instance, here and here, have the same kinetic energy, and they are very happy to mix. So on the surface of the Fermi distribution, on the surface of the Fermi distribution, the wave functions that I have introduced are good wave functions. And that brings about a splitting, not a small one. It can amount to an electron volt and probably more. Such that the inner quadrangle, which I said is filled, is lowered, particularly on its edges, and raised in the outer sides, and therefore we have in this inner quadrangle a filled complete region, and it's an insulator with spins alternating on the whole between neighboring couples. Now I introduce some holes. How do I do it? Instead of lanthanum that has three electrons to give away, I put in strontium or barium, which has only two electrons to give away. There must be a deficiency of electrons, and the easiest place to take them away from is the top of that Fermi distribution that I have been talking to you about. And these holes, which are 15% of the ninth electron in the optimal case, they make up the Fermi puddle that I talked about. But now, and here I come to the one essential point in what I want to tell you. And of this, I'm sure. The consequences that I will try to draw from that are very much less sure. But this much is simple and clear. Where will these electrons be? Where is the Fermi puddle? All right? The Fermi puddle is here. A thin region on the surface of the square. In fact, it is the shaded region. And in fact, I made the Fermi puddle much too extensive. It's lighter. Furthermore, its boundaries are not straight. I drew them straight because I did not know how they are curved. Now, this is a Fermi distribution with an extraordinarily big surface as unlike an ordinary Fermi distribution as it possibly can be. One feature of this Fermi distribution that is perfectly obvious, and for some strange reason people don't talk much about it. The mass, the effective mass of these holes are not numbers, they are tensors. You know, the mass is described where, for instance, in the neighborhood of such a discontinuity, the energy can be written as momentum squared or quasi-momentum squared divided by a constant, all right? That constant is the mass. P squared over m is the effective kinetic energy. Now I claim that P squared over m is quite different if I go in this direction, and again different if I go in that direction. Here, the energy changes rapidly. Here, the energy is practically constant. P squared over m must be small here. The mass in that direction is big. The velocities with which these holes can move will be small. When the holes try to move in this direction, then their mass will be great. I claim, now, so far I haven't told you anything except what is obvious. I now want to draw a conclusion which I think is right. People have said, rightly, that these superconductors, the new superconductors, behave in a very peculiar way, even at high temperatures or higher temperatures, where they are not yet superconductors. If you plot the resistance against the temperature in any decent metal, the resistance, decent, clean metal, the resistance falls with the temperature. At low temperature, the resistance becomes very small, and near absolute zero, it increases with a power of the momentum. The reason being that the only way the electrons can get rid of their energy is collision with lattice vibrations. And the lattice vibrations we are talking about, because low energies are involved, are sonic vibrations, sound vibrations, and if the temperature is low, then very few sound vibrations are available. The specific heat is low. You cannot find the sound vibrations to which to give the electron energy. Why shouldn't it be here the same way? Two remarks. The electron-electron collision in connection with conductivity is usually neglected because momentum is preserved, and therefore, if the mass is a constant, the velocity and the current is conserved. The electrons can collide, but that won't diminish their current. Here, the mass is not a number, but a tensor. And there will be a tendency to give the energy to that part of the momentum that is connected with a big mass and a small velocity. Therefore, when you try to put a current into this substance, be above the superconducting point, relatively small currents will flow. And the important thing is that the velocity can become, the electron velocity can become so small that it is comparable with the velocity with which vibrations propagate. And that means that the exchange of energy between the electrons and the vibrations become easy. I have neither the time nor the full theory to elaborate that and to show all the consequences. But I suspect that the mass is particularly large, the velocity is particularly small in the corners. Small velocity. It is here that the exchange with the lattice vibrations occur, and under these conditions you can show that it is plausible that the resistance should be roughly proportional to the temperature which is found. Incidentally, I want to draw here, I have drawn here, a typical Fermi surface, and I imagine that if I have a very few holes, they may concentrate here, near the middle of the diagonal, whereas the corners will be occupied when you have extracted approximately 15% of the 9th D electron. Now, I haven't said anything yet about superconductivity, and it is terrible because I have exhausted all my time, and I still have approximately an hour to go, and I hope you will tolerate me for a fraction of that time. About superconductivity. It comes about in the standard theory because electrons get coupled to the sound vibrations. At low energies, these vibrations have long wavelengths. And you get the result that electrons coupled to the sound vibrations, which are coupled back to electrons, give rise to a coupling between pairs of electrons of opposite spin moving in opposite directions, the Cooper pairs, and because the long wavelengths of the sonic vibrations, electrons interact at quite a distance from each other. Here, the situation is entirely different. You have a strong interaction with the oxygen vibrations, and I would like to emphasize the point that while in this plane here that I have drawn, a copper is surrounded by four oxygens. There is a fifth and sixth oxygen above and below it. Now, where there is a hole, there the oxygens above and below try to converge on that positive charge of the hole, and you have a natural, strong coupling between the ions and the few electrons, and their interaction cannot be shielded because there are only few electrons around and the shielding, therefore, is weak. Now, in order to get a strong interaction between these optic vibrations and the electron states, you ought to concentrate the electron states into a group so that the electrons, or rather the holes, should be a small region onto which from above and below the oxygens can converge. Then when the oxygens converged, then electrons of two opposite spins can interact with them. These are the pairs or the Cooper pairs. And their interaction with each other gives rise to a condensation known as superconductivity. I will now adopt all of this and point out essential differences. I have explained to you that the whole wave functions, the wave functions of the missing electrons, will be present for spin-up only on every second side, for spin-down on the other side. If I now try to concentrate the region in which a spin-up hole and a spin-down hole occupy something like a circle, then in this circle the oxygens will converge and create such a pair. I now talk BCS, Bardi-Schiffer-Cooper theory. Bardi-Cooper-Schiffer theory. Now I want to tell you why I was wrong, why I have to talk about it differently. By concentrating the wave functions into a small region, I increase the interaction with the lattice. But to concentrate, to localize electrons in this direction is difficult. Because in this direction, when I change the momentum, energy changes. Great deviations from original momentum values cost energy. And therefore, I cannot localize the electrons, the holes very well. In this direction, the energy is practically independent of the momentum. Therefore, in this direction, I can concentrate and instead of localizing electron pairs onto a circle, I will localize them onto ellipse, like this. The ellipse is a little faint. You see it? Poor localization in this direction, good localization in that direction. If this is true, then you can show, and now I'm giving you fantasies. If you put a strong current through the superconductor, the pairs will try to move in the long arm. My native Hungary is a wonderful place, but it has shortcomings. Look, nothing in the world draws attention like a failure, except perhaps the stopping of that failure. Here is the ellipse. I believe if there is a current, these ellipses will move easily in the long direction. these regions will orient, and that probably can be seen experimentally. One of the consequences of the kind of theory I am trying to describe to you. Now, I have to hurry, because I have to tell you about two things in which I am really interested. These are just obvious questions of interest to everybody. But there are two special questions. Isotope effect. The one sensation, the one early sensation about superconductivity was that the transition temperature depends on the isotope. That showed that the lattice vibrations have something to do with superconductivity. Big surprise. And we all know that this is so. And then we got into high temperature superconductivity, and it wasn't so. We substituted oxygen by oxygen 18, and TC did not budge. Therefore, people said, this time superconductivity is not connected with lattice vibrations. My statement is, the conclusion is wrong. And I tell you why. Probably most of you know it already. In the lanthanum compound, if you substitute barely enough lanthanum by strontium to give superconductivity at a relatively low temperature, like 20 degrees Kelvin, you have a full-blown isotope effect. If you introduce more and more strontium and approach the optimal, the highest TC, the isotope effect continuously goes down. So obviously, lattice vibrations have something to do with it. But lattice vibrations have something to do with it in a more refined way, so that the interaction with the lattice has some peculiarities that do not occur in the normal superconductivity. I will tell you what I think this peculiarity is. I told you that the interacting regions, which incidentally are quite small, consist of a dozen lattice cells. They have an ellipsoidal shape. And it is not difficult to convince yourself that as you get near the optimum, where the Fermi puzzle includes the corners, includes the whole diagonal, then you can make your ellipse extremely thin. And it may consist of just two strands of coppers along the diagonal, one with spin up, one with spin down. And once you have reached that state, then the type of interaction with the lattice will change, and one can give arguments that there the interaction has a big enough amplitude, for instance, that the isotope effect, which usually occurs only when one considers merely the 0-1 transition and not a more strong interaction, the isotope effect then can vanish. It is, I claim, connected with the point that the regions in which the electrons interact become as thin as they possibly can become, and after that, the lattice vibrations interact with the electrons still, but in a different way from the usual. To make from all of this a consistent quantitative theory is a big job. Now I want to spend all the time I no longer have on a different subject, the buckyballs. and their superconductivity. Now, first of all, I want to tell you that the buckyballs prove one fact, which to me was most surprising, and that is that chemists have a sense of humor. To name giant molecules after the wonderful Buckminster Fuller, who was not, I might tell you, a solid-state physicist, that, I think, took a little bit of imagination. You all know that the buckyballs are carbon-60, arranged on a sphere with 60 corners, 12 pentagons, 20 hexagons, very stable, appearing in a solid form that boils off, sublimes at approximately 1,000 degree Kelvin, that I say could be obtained in a liquid form under pressure, which would be extremely interesting because it probably dissolves metals and can be used to make alloys under unusual conditions, that the buckyballs is a new form of chemistry. I hardly need to tell you. Now, in the case of the buckyballs, I had a very nice conversation with wonderful colleagues from Germany, from Japan, from the United States, from Tokyo, Kansas City, Stuttgart, if I remember rightly, and I found out a number of amazing things, which I will now predict. And predict a little more. First of all, in the buckyballs, there is only one long lifetime for the positron. They are all captured in the same place. And where is that place? In a cubic closed packing or any spherical closed packing, there are three interstices, two small ones and one big one. They are captured in the big interstices. They could be captured instead in the center of the buckyball, but I'm sure they aren't. Why? Because if you change the temperature and particularly pressure, the lifetime changes. You increase the pressure and the lifetime becomes rapidly shorter. The center of the buckyball would not compress. The interstices would. But now comes the real point. If you add to the buckyballs three alkalis, you get a superconductor. For some strange reason, certainly not understood by me, lithium and sodium don't do it. Potassium, rubidium, cesium have transition temperatures at 18 Kelvin, 28 Kelvin, and 33 Kelvin, respectively. And now I will tell you what I think the structure of these things are. The superconducting substance is three alkalis to one buckyball. The three alkalis, I claim, go into the three interstitial spaces, not into the center. One strong indication is that if you compress these alkalized buckyballs, the superconducting temperature becomes very sensitive to pressure at 20,000 atmospheres, 2 gigapascals, 20 gigapascals. The TC, Los Alamos measurements, has gone down from 18 degrees to 7 degrees. The centers of the buckyballs would not be affected. The model I believe in, on which I want to conclude, is this. There are in the spherical packing two small places which have a tetragonal surrounding. They have no room for electrons. These electrons are given over, I believe, to the surface of the buckyballs. By every buckyball having two extra electrons, this is like an insulator. The electrons don't move. It's an ionic lattice with two positive potassium ions and one doubly negative buckyball. The third potassium retains its electron, and this last electron out of three forms the Fermi puddle and is coupled with the potassium and buckyball ions and brings about the same general initial conditions that I have described at the very beginning of my lecture. One very interesting remark, all the measurements so far agree that the lifetime of the positron, there is only one lifetime, it must be in the interstices because it shortens when you compress the metal, it lengthens when you heat, not the metal, the buckyballs, it lengthens when you heat the compound and expand it. I would be very interested to see what happens for the positron lifetime when you go to the superconducting state. If I'm right, the positrons have been captured in the same place where the superconducting positron, where the superconducting potassium goes. And therefore, when you put in potassium, you, even a little, you will have difficulty in placing the positrons. And when you have put in enough positrons, then you probably will find a new lifetime characteristic of the center of the buckyballs. Why did it not go there first? The curvature of the buckyballs forces electrons to the outside, and that gives a positive potential in the center of the buckyballs. That's why the positrons did not go there as a place of choice, even though there is a little room there. If you fill up the interstices with alkalis, with rubidium, for instance, then you might find a brand new lifetime because the positrons might have gone to the center of the buckyballs. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I have stuck out my neck a mile, giving rise to a prediction which could easily go wrong, and I will now finish by telling you something unrelated and important. I am happily in my native Hungary. I am in a county named Vas or Iron. And this is the symbol of this county. You may have already seen it. And the essential part of it is the carrying of this piece of iron. And I recommend to you, as visitors here, the investigation of this iron, whether it can be made free of imperfections, or even better, whether one could put into it planned imperfections to make out of that piece of iron a lucky horseshoe. Thank you very much.
Elhangzott Teller Ede előadása a Berzsenyi Dániel Tanárképző Főiskolán. A felvétel 1991. november 5-én készült. Az előadás angol nyelvű. A felvételt Pehi László készítette. Köszönjük a Berzsenyi Dániel Tanárképző Főiskola segítségét, aminek videostúdiójában a felvétel készült.